You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and you're about to get some inspiration for eating plant proteins on fleek, like on every day of the week. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party, so you'll, you know, actually want to do it, and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. Since this podcast episode dives into the wonderful world and essential world of eating plant proteins, it is only fitting that my fave plant protein company, Sun Warrior, is sponsoring it. If you've spent but a few seconds skimming my Instagram or binge watching my YouTube channel, which you really should, by the way, if you haven't yet. But when you do that, you'll see that Sun Warrior Plant Protein Powder is the Kanye to my West, the bees to my knees, the Wilson to my castaway, something I would not want to live without. When I'm looking for a way to make my smoothies actually fill me up so I don't need a follow-up snack a few minutes after finishing my smoothie, I blend in Sun Warrior. Because I don't want to get bloated, gassy, or feel crappy after consuming protein powder, I use Sun Warrior. Because I am not a fan of protein powders with weird, chalky textures and nasty flavors, I use Sun Warrior. See, it's no wonder I blend Sun Warrior protein powder into every smoothie I make and bake it into almost every baked good I bake. If you want some recipes for doing the same, head to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/partyinmyplants. Click subscribe and you'll get an epic, easy Sun Warrior plant protein recipe in your inbox every month. And if you want to get your mitts on Sun Warrior for 15% less than the rest of the world pays to get their mitts on it, just use the code PARTYINMYPLANTS at checkout on their site, sunwarrior.com. Again, in case you sneezed as I said that, I said you can use code PARTYINMYPLANTS at checkout on sunwarrior.com to save 15%, my friend. The end. Today's guest is as good at word playing with kale as she is at making you want to eat kale. And to that, I say kale, yeah. Of course, duh, you totally saw that coming. Karina Wolf, known on the interwebs as Kale Me Maybe, is a health and wellness journalist, food blogger, and a cookbook author who hails from California. Ba-doom-cha. What started for Karina as a casual, no big deal blog to share the awesome info she was learning about how awesome healthy foods are for our bods has since turned into two awesome plant party cookbooks, both books about some of my favorite plant party activities, spiralizing and eating plant proteins. Naturally, this is a plant party chat for the books. And also naturally, good luck getting Kale Me Maybe out of your head. Kale Me Maybe. You know, that song blew up in 2012. Is that not coincidentally when your Kale Me Maybe was born?
Yeah, I actually started at the end of 2012. So
go.
I got my inspiration from Carly Rae Jepsen.
Maybe. That's so fun. So how did Kale Me Maybe come to be? What is it?
Okay, so Kale Me Maybe is a healthy food blog. I'm mostly plant-based, but I don't hold myself to any dietary restrictions. So I cover food that fits for everyone. It started when I was in college. I was a senior and I've always been into writing and I was a journalism major and a psychology major. So I was interested in health, but I didn't really get into healthy food until I was in college. My family was actually really healthy and I didn't really care for it or didn't like it at all. And yeah, and I wanted to eat like junk food all the time because my mom would only buy like whole wheat bread, like all natural
funny.
Food.
Yeah, you rebelled.
But I didn't care. And then I went to school and I like kind of went through a phase of eating whatever I wanted. And then I was like, this doesn't feel that good. so I wanted to kind of look into what were the reasons we should be healthy rather than just like, this is what you need to eat. Mm. So I started doing my own research. And once I started like cooking for myself and kind of like looking at the science behind why you should eat healthy more than just for your weight, I was really intrigued. And I felt like this was something that I didn't really know. And I assumed that a lot of people didn't really know about this either. And I thought, you know, like, I want to be a journalist. What is something that I can write about that I care about? And I realized it was food and nutrition. So I started the blog actually as a portfolio of my writing work for when I was going to apply for jobs after college. And I was posting regularly. I actually got my first internship from it. Huh. And I was getting really good responses from people online, like my friends and like other people who are reading it through the internet. And I just continued it because it was fun and people were inspired. And then it turned into what it is today.
That's so cool. Wow. That's such an interesting beginning. You really don't hear that often, that, you know, you started it as kind of a portfolio, like you said, or a resume, or just a passion, you know, not trying to gain attention, just trying to write about something that interested you.
Yeah, exactly. And back then, you know, like Instagram was pretty new. No one was really on it. Like I wasn't even on Instagram at that time. I was just blogging on like a blog spot. So for me, it wasn't like, oh, I need to, you know, become a blogger and get an Instagram that was popular. That wasn't crossing my mind at all. Although now that that's happened, it's great because I'm reaching more people. But it really was to share the information. And I think that's what attracted people to it, because they were learning the things that they didn't know that I also didn't know that I felt were important.
Talk to me about that initial research that you did that really kind of convinced you that healthy eating is where it's at, because it's really interesting. You grew up with your family eating healthily and you were like, nah, not for me. Then you went to college and didn't feel that great, started eating kind of better, but I guess the whole like body image thing wasn't your motivation and you wanted to see like what it would do for your insides to eat more plants or eat healthier. So that initial research that really intrigued you, like, do you remember what that was?
Yeah. Well, I remember I was thinking about, you know, like obviously if you eat healthy, you know, you can have a better weight or whatever, but I didn't really care about that as much. I mean, that to me was like the only thing that was being talked about. Mm-hmm. But then when I would look up, you know, like what's a healthy food to eat for lunch or whatever, you know, something would come up like quinoa. And then I would start to say like, okay, well, what makes quinoa healthy? Like what makes a food healthy versus unhealthy besides like maybe it's low calorie, whatever, which again, wasn't really like of interest to me. Mm-hmm. So then I would look up quinoa and then I would see like, oh, it, you know, contains fiber that helps with energy, that helps with this, like it has cancer fighting properties. And then I was like, wow, there's so much more to food than just weight. And I would just get like lost into this black hole of research about all these things that food can do. And I was really, truly amazed at what food was capable of. I mean, it's not really something that you hear about unless you're looking out for it. And now obviously healthy food and healthy eating is a bit more popular and mainstream. So people are getting that information more than ever, which is really great. But I feel like when I was, you know, 18, that was not stuff that was coming my way. I wasn't getting exposed to this information. I found it really, really interesting and more relevant to me. You know, like I want to eat foods that are going to help me live a high quality of life, not just like make me look good, although that is part of it. But, you know, it was inspiring to see, like, if you eat a lot of garlic, you could live a longer life. I was like, great, why not? Like, let's throw some garlic in this meal. Let's figure out a way to, like, combine all of these foods so that your meals are the maximum nutrition.
I mean, to me, I feel like the research is still kind of lacking. I mean, I think you have to really be searching for it. But right now, it's all about, like, the latest product, the latest this, the latest food trend, you know, sweet potato toast, whatever it is. But people don't really know necessarily like why they ought to be eating that sweet potato toast. They just know it's trendy. It looks pretty.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what motivated me to turn to the journalism side of things while I did my blog, because I think blogging and Instagram, it can give you a lot of really great ideas about what's healthy. But most people who aren't in this world or who are just like, you know, browsing through for breakfast ideas aren't going to take the time to look up on their own why sweet potato toast is healthy. They just take your word for it, which can be really good if you're, you know, responsible about the information you put out there. But what I do with the journalism stuff is I actually look at research and I spend the time going through like peer reviewed journals and I'll interview nutritionists and then you really get the facts. And of course, like that information does shift and change over time as we figure out new things and it can be frustrating for people. But it's really, I think, important to know the why, because that can help you figure out what to eat on your own when you don't have like an Instagram person telling you what to eat.
And inspire you to want to actually eat that, you know, like if you know that XYZ is going to make you feel XYZ or improve XYZ, you're going to be more likely to pass on the crap and eat the XYZ.
Exactly. Yeah. It had to come from yourself and from actually wanting it and knowing the reasons why.
Yeah. So what is your food philosophy then? I mean, I know I just XYZ'd out the wazoo, but for me, all the XYs and Zs are plants, obviously. I mean, I just love helping people eat more plants. And I feel like you are on the same team.
Yes, definitely. I always get asked if I'm a vegetarian or a vegan, and I am not, although most of the meals I eat at home are vegetarian or vegan, and I always opt to try to eat that way if possible. I mean, I'm all about the plants. There's obviously so many healthy benefits of eating a plant-based diet, and I encourage people to cut out meat as much as possible. I mean, so much of healthy food comes from plants. So if you're not eating a diet that has plants in it, you're probably not going to be that healthy, and you're not going to have the benefits that you would want, whether it's in how you feel day to day or long term. I just try to eat like as clean as possible. I would call myself more a clean eating blog, like plant-based clean eating, anti-sugar, obviously in like small quantities, of course, but more like trying to, instead of eating a packaged food and seeing that it has some added sugar in it, like make it at home yourself. And then if you want to eat like a little dessert on the side, no one's going to judge you for that.
It's interesting that you say that, you know, when you're home and you're eating mostly vegan or vegetarian and that most people think you're vegan or vegetarian, because I'm the exact same way. I don't cook any real animal products in my house or eat them at home. But when I go out, you know, maybe once or twice a week at most, I'll eat some fish. And people are shocked when they're out with me and that happens. They're like, what the hell? I thought you were a vegan. And then I have to explain that. I mean, for me, at least, my Instagram and my, you know, business and all the whole thing is about helping people eat more plants. I don't think people need help eating more animal products. I think everyone needs some inspo to eat more plants.
Exactly. That's funny. And I think that one of the reasons when I'm out, like you were saying, I don't want to feel restricted. And for me, eating stuff like fish actually works great with my body. And there are times when I just crave that and I try to listen to that. And I will try to make the healthiest choices, of course, when I'm like opting for fish, like I'll get like wild fish. But if it's not, like I don't beat myself up over it. And then at the same time, I do like applaud people who want to stick to like a completely vegan diet. Like that's great if that works for them. But one of the reasons that I'm not vegan is actually has to do with my schooling as well. For my senior year thesis, I spent the whole year doing a long investigative piece about the food or the role of food on your mood.
Oh,
which kind of goes back to what you're saying. So this is one of my favorite topics. And one of the things that I learned is that there is a benefit to animal products when it comes to your mood and your energy levels. And a lot of vegetarians who don't really eat, I mean, it's not who don't eat well, but who aren't getting all the nutrients that they need end up actually feeling depressed. And there are a lot of studies about that. And I spoke to a lot of people who were like very strictly vegetarian and vegan and ended up having some mood issues from that. So for me, the balance is to incorporate a little bit of animal products here and there for that purpose. And it seems to work for me. Again, everyone's different. So some people might like thrive on a vegan diet to like the happiest that they ever felt. But for me, if I have that craving and I'm feeling a little hazy and foggy, like I'll eat some fish or I'll eat some like grass-fed meat very once in a while.
That is so interesting. Do you know why that is? Why, you know, adding a little bit of animals protein into your diet can help your mood?
Yeah, well, a lot of the nutrients in these animal products, like tryptophan, for example, they convert to serotonin. So they help raise your serotonin levels. So people who aren't getting enough of those precursors to serotonin end up not feeling as like energetic and not as stable or happy. And again, like I said, it's different per person. Everyone's mood levels are like different to begin with. But yeah, there are nutrients in there that kind of work with all of those neurotransmitters to make you feel better.
Wow. What about anxiety in food? I mean, so one of the things that you do in addition to write cookbooks and make amazing recipes, which we will definitely get into, don't you worry. But one thing you do is you write a lot for Bustle, which is a terrific, I don't know, what would you call it? A platform, a blog, a media company?
Yeah. Online magazine, I guess.
Online mag. Okay. Yeah. So a terrific online magazine, you know, Bustle, which actually, funny enough, they came into my home and did this whole like video piece on me. There was like a crew of 15. We did this like video thing of a day in my life, which I'll post in the show notes. It was really fun, but I love Bustle.
Yeah, and you see that.
Yeah, it's so fun. But you write a lot about anxiety for them, which I guess maybe that's because you have your psychology degree and your journalism. So it's just like marrying the two.
Exactly. I've always been really passionate about mental health. I find it so interesting. And I think that so many of the issues just in general, anything in life stem from mental health. So for me, it's something that it falls under the same category and umbrella as nutrition, focusing on what you eat and also focusing on how you feel mentally. yeah. is something that I like to educate others about.
Have you found through research and, you know, talking to experts that there's a connection between anxiety and food? I know we talked about mood. I mean, anxiety is mood, kind of.
It was the thesis I did was on anxiety and depression, and there is a lot of research on food and anxiety. And whenever people experience, like my friends will come to me and say that they're feeling anxious today, I'm like, well, what did you eat? Did you eat this? Like, have you eaten? I actually have mostly given up coffee because of how it makes me feel. And coffee is one of those foods that actually makes a lot of people feel anxious.
Because of the caffeine or just something else in coffee?
Yeah, the caffeine.
Yeah, it's true.
There's a lot of research on that. There are foods that like can make your anxiety worse. There's foods that can help with your anxiety. And again, it's really contingent on the person. But like some of the foods in general, like sugar is a big one. Sugar is really anxiety inducing. And like high trans fat foods, refined carbohydrates. So kind of all the junk foods that you typically think of are actually like the biggest perpetrators of anxiety, which makes sense. But a lot of people don't realize that. And again, they think like, oh, if I eat, you know, this white pasta, like I'm going to gain weight. It's like, no, it's more than that. Actually, it's about your mood, your anxiety, your depression. And I mean, eating one bowl of white pasta isn't going to make you anxious for the day.
Right.
But but if your diet overall consists of a lot of these anxiety-inducing foods, it really can have an effect on your mental state.
Wow. And what are some of the foods that can help? I assume if the crap foods are the ones that can make the anxiety worse, then the antidote, the plant foods can help?
Yeah. So nuts are really good. Like healthy fats like avocado, complex carbohydrates are really good for that actually. What else? Oh, fish. Fish is a really good one for mood because of the omega-3s. So another reason why fish.
Interesting. One more article that you wrote about anxiety that I loved was about noticing the first signs of anxiety. And, you know, it's interesting because for some people like myself, it's really freaking obvious when I'm anxious. You know, like I know I'm feeling anxious right now. But for other people like my fiance, you know, he can just go through normal days, a normal week and not even know that he's like ridden with anxiety. I was shocked that your article addressed that because I thought that was just something I experienced or he was whacked out that he can't pick up on his own anxiety. But apparently that's a thing.
Yeah. I think again, like it totally depends on the person. Like for me, when I start to feel a little anxious or jittery, like I know right away and I'm like, what's going on? Is something bothering me? Did I eat something? Have I been like sleeping weird? But I think anxiety can also manifest itself into these like physical symptoms. And when people think of anxiety, they usually think of like racing thoughts or like a racing heartbeat, but it can like subtly kind of creep into your sleep. It can make you moody in a way that doesn't feel like anxiety. You just feel crabby. Maybe you're like distracted. And these are all things that people experience all the time. And if it's happening kind of together, like it really could indicate something like anxiety. But if you're not, you know, paying close attention, or even if you are, not all issues are super obvious to people all the time. And it can be good to take a step back and think like, oh, am I cranky today because I'm just like worried about something? Or maybe I'm just having anxiety that has nothing to do with my thoughts. It's just a physical thing that's happening to me. But, you know, that's why I'm in a bad mood or that's why I am having these nightmares. And it can really help to figure out the root of what's going on.
Yeah, for sure. Well, one thing that makes some people anxious is healthy cooking, which you do really well. So I'm curious, how did you go from researching and learning about nutrition to actually coming up with recipes in your kitchen? Like, how did you learn how to cook?
Yeah, so I'm kind of self-taught. I mean, I'm not like a professional chef or anything like that. I started off by just looking at cookbooks. I picked up some healthy cookbooks. And when I went to college, my mom gave me a few. I think she gave me the Gwyneth Paltrow one and Daphne Oz. And I would just go through those and I started off just following the recipes. And then I started to look online a lot more when I would have like particular cravings. I was like, oh, I'm in the mood for like this kind of pasta. Like, how can I make this healthier? And then I would Google it and kind of just like browse through. And that's how it began, just like looking at other recipes. And then eventually I kind of just started to like, you know, look at it, get inspiration, and then create my own. And then that kind of just led to me playing around in the kitchen. I mean, it was really a lot of experimenting. And I think people get like you said, they get anxious and nervous about healthy cooking. Like they're going to mess it up or like it's going to turn out really bad or something. And I'm like, trust me, it's a lot harder to mess up than you think. Like I've had a few recipe flops in my life, but you know, maybe it doesn't come out exactly the way you want, but it's really, really difficult to really, truly mess up a recipe.
Right.
And it's okay to get creative and like add flavors that might not go together. I still do it all the time. And sometimes I like it and there's no rules and there's no right or wrong, as long as you're not like burning your food to the crisp or like, you know, eating undercooked chicken or something, then you're probably okay. And it's like, again, like I said, it's kind of hard to really mess something up. And I think that's what stops so many people from trying, that it doesn't look like the perfect Instagram bowl. I'm like, don't worry. I eat really ugly meals all the time.
I know. I feel like you're so right. People get nervous or it's just, yeah, maybe Instagram is just intimidating people. I don't really know, but there's really nothing to be nervous or anxious about. I mean, when in doubt with vegetables, just add a pinch of sea salt and it's going to make them taste so good.
Exactly. Like there's, you know, put lemon on there, just some hot sauce or something. It's for me, I tell people just experiment, because that's how I like figured it out. Like I just throw things in and they usually work out pretty well.
So your first cookbook was all about spiralizing, which that's a lot of spiralizer recipes to write a whole cookbook on it.
Oh yeah.
How did that come to be?
So I got into spiralizing from the blogger in Spiralize, which I'm pretty sure you know who she is.
Yeah, she was the first podcast guest on the show.
Oh yes, I saw that. So I found her like way in the beginning. When she started, like, I think she had like 5,000 followers on Instagram or something. And I was like, this is amazing. I love pasta. I want to eat pasta all the time, but this is like a way healthier version of doing this. Mm-hmm. This is so cool. So I like ordered a spiralizer like instantly after I found her blog. And, this was also in the beginning of when I joined Instagram. So I started posting like as many spiralized recipes as I could, because I was making spiralized food like every single day. So I think I jumped on the trend pretty early. And I was approached by a publisher like a year or two later who had found my blogs on, or how found my recipe on my blogs. And they were like, we're looking for an author for a spiralizer cookbook. Are you interested? And at this point, I was still working at a 9-to-5 job. I was working at a health and wellness PR agency and blogging on the side and freelancing on the side.
And you're not that old. Like you're a young person. I don't know how young you are, but you're like a young human being.
I'm 26.
Okay. So this was a few years ago.
Yeah.
When you were 24?
Yeah, I was 24.
Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. It was not expected, but it was a very welcome surprise. Like I said, I've wanted to write my whole life, and one of my life goals was to have a book published. Aww. I did not expect to do it this early.
And about spiralizing.
Yeah. So it was actually a really great opportunity for me, because although I like panicked slightly when I got that email and I was like, how will I do this?
How did you do it?
Yeah, I don't know still to this day how I did it. But I ended up leaving my 9-to-5 and pursuing the cookbook and pursuing writing and blogging full time. And I've been doing it since. And that was really what gave me the leap to kind of pursue my passion. And it was hard, but very, very worth it and satisfying. And I'm glad that that happened.
That's so cool. So they just came to you.
Yeah, they found me on my blog. I think I just had a lot of stuff on Pinterest because I was really on that spiralizer trend early on. And they were like, do you want to do this? I was like, okay.
Let's do it. Do you still spiralize a lot?
I do. For a little bit, I had to take a break because that's all I was eating.
Got a little burnt out.
Yeah. And I was like, I can't do this. And then after that break, I still make a lot of spiralized food. It's just such a great option when you're really craving like a hearty bowl of pasta or something like that, when you're trying to eat light, and just like a wonderful way to get in your veggies. And I just think it tastes good and it's fun.
Yeah. So what are your favorite plants to spiralize?
I have to say zucchini will always be number one.
So lame. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I like to do zucchini noodles with pesto. That's always a go-to for me. And I also really like to do either potato or sweet potato, and then bake it so it's kind of crispy. And then I'll put it on top of a salad to add some crunch.
Ooh, okay. So when I've done sweet potato, I'll just saute it. But baking sounds lovely.
Yeah, they're both good. I mean, they're all great.
And when you do zucchini, do you keep it raw with the pesto, or do you saute the zucchini noodles and then add the pesto?
Both. Depending on the mood that I'm in, if it's like a hot day, I like to make it, or a cool day, I like to make it hot. And then if it's like a hot day, I'll just keep it raw, because zucchini is pretty soft, so you don't always need to cook it. But
yeah,
if you want it a little softer, I would say like saute it for like 2 minutes.
What's the weirdest plant that you spiralized for your book?
Weirdest. I did a celeriac. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Root, which was weird. It was like this furry, like, I can't even explain what it is. It's like this furry root vegetable and you have to like really peel off and like scrape off the outside. And I made it into a salad. It was tasty. It was just an effort.
Yeah, that sounds like it. I mean, I feel like the sweet potato and the zucchini are the easiest ones. And apple's actually pretty good.
Yeah, I like to do apples too. And I always forget that I can. But
yeah, that's fun. Delicious. I've tried a pepper multiple times because Allie, you know, who was the first guest, the Inspiralized founder, she does spiralized bell peppers all the time. And I've watched her video and I've done it. I've tried it numerous times, but it just doesn't work out for me. I always get all the seeds. They don't go away. I can't separate it.
Yeah, I haven't perfected peppers by any means. I like to stick to the easy ones.
Yeah, the like ones that were like built for the spiralizer.
Yeah. I know she's good. Hers always come out so beautiful.
I know. What the hell is that about?
Lessons from you.
She's a spiralized whisperer.
She is. She truly is.
So you have a second book out that I am even more excited about, and it's about to come out, or it's out whenever this is airing, but it's all about plant protein sources, which I am the number one cheerleader of.
Yes, plant protein, definitely up both of our alleys.
Yes. Yeah, so how did this book come to be?
Same kind of thing. It was the same publisher. And since I had worked with them once before, they came to me and they were like, we want this book written. And I was like, okay, guess I'm doing it round two.
I've never heard of this where publishers are just like, I have a book idea, you are writing it. It's usually an author has a book idea and they beg somebody to publish it.
I know. I'm really lucky that I got to skip those steps. I am very fortunate in that regard.
Like maybe because your, you know, blog is a spoof on Call Me Maybe. People are like, oh, I'll kale her. I'll call her.
They trust me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they were like, we want a book on plant protein.
Yeah. And obviously that one really caught my eye.
There's not much like that out there.
No, and I think it's really important because anytime you talk about eating plant-based, the first thing people always say is,
where
but what about protein?
Yeah.
Like, well, how about these like 10 things that you can eat? You know, like there's so many options and this is a book that needs to be written because people need to know their options.
Well, tell us the options. Tell us like when someone says to you, now that you've written the book, you've probably been deep in the plant protein mindset. How long did the book take to write?
I did this one in 3 months.
Wow.
Yeah. Very quick.
Do you photograph it too?
Yes.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's crazy short amount of time. I think people usually get like a year or more to do books, but I was set deadlines for both of these that were very, very short, which is cool because like I immersed myself in it for 3 months, but also crazy because that's all I did for 3 months and it's pretty grueling, but like obviously very satisfying.
So you must have really bulked up with all that plant protein over the past, whatever, 5 months, 3 months.
Yeah, I'm really ripped now. So plant proteins.
Yeah.
I mean, the obvious ones are like beans and legumes, nuts and seeds, soy products like tofu, tempeh, but a lot of vegetables too, like kale, broccoli, spinach, potatoes. I like to combine all of them. So you'll see in the book, some of them are like, you know, very obviously, like this is a tofu meal, but others I'll put like a combination of vegetables and seeds and nuts and, you know, all of that kind of adds up.
Yeah, that makes sense. You can't just be like, I mean, in my opinion, I'm going to eat, you know, a few leaves of kale for protein.
Right, exactly.
Like you mix them to, yeah, I think they all build up. If you have a very plant heavy meal with, like you said, kale and broccoli, spinach, potatoes, if you're saying, I didn't know those had protein, which sweet or regular?
Both.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, like it's not, you know, the same as eating a steak, obviously, of course, but you don't have to have that much protein per every meal.
Right.
So if you're eating something like, you know, I like to use chickpeas a lot or like lentils. If you make a bowl of lentils with some quinoa, which has protein, and then add some kale to that and maybe sprinkle on some hemp seeds, like that's a good amount of protein right there.
Yes. Right. Yeah. I think plants in general don't have, aside from the soys, you know, they don't have any major players. It's about adding them up, except for beans and legumes too.
Yeah, beans and legumes are good. And lentils, I would say, are your best bet.
But how much can you eat of that? You know, that's harder to digest.
Yeah. Again, this is totally dependent on the person. Like, I don't really have a problem eating beans, but I know a lot of people have major issues with digestion. Mm. So, you know, that's why it's good to combine it with other stuff. Like, I don't know, a quarter cup, half a cup. Like, that's a pretty good amount right there.
Yeah.
On some other stuff in there that's easier to digest, then that's good. And even if people want to, like, you know, cut the amount of chicken they eat in half and then add in some, like, chickpeas with the meal, you can do that too. I think any, like, shift towards more plant-based is a good step in the right direction. And for some people, it's really daunting to think of, like, completely eliminating meat, which I totally, totally get. So just, like, knowing what these things are as options is really important too.
Oh, and so much.
And, like, I sprinkle hemp seeds on, like, everything. I'll add sunflower seeds to things. I'll add nuts to salads. And it's really easy. And there's obviously benefits beyond just the protein too.
Yeah.
So I think these are really good things that people should be aware of. And this book kind of aims to show them that and their options.
It should be like, I mean, I haven't seen your book in the flesh, but I have a feeling it should be like the textbook that new plant people read and absorb, because really the number one thing people are concerned about is, where am I going to get my protein? I'm down to eat more plants. I'm down to do it. I don't even like chicken that much. I will cut it out. No problem.
Yeah.
But what do I do? How do I feel full? How do I, you know, maintain my muscles? You know, I have a lot of people that come to me and they're like, I was told I should go vegan, or I want to go vegan, but, you know, my husband's doing it with me and he's just lost all of his muscle.
Yeah. And I think that goes down to eating, like, the right balance of foods too. And when they don't know how, that's what happens. They eat, like, you know, just carbs all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's understandable. And the book, the way I wrote the book too, was that it's not just geared towards people who are already vegetarian or vegan or people who love plants. It's geared towards everyone. So I tried to think of, like, what are some meals that, like, the average person likes to eat, like, you know, like pizza or buffalo wings or whatever. And then I turned those meals vegetarian by using plant proteins, but keeping the same flavors and the same, like, textures and that same satisfying feeling that you would get. This is supposed to be for the everyday person. It's not just going to be for, like, that kale loving, like, you know, hemp seed eating person, although, like, I would love everyone to incorporate those foods.
Yeah.
But it's for the everyday person for sure.
That's great. And I'm curious, what are your thoughts on soy? I mean, I'm sure you've done your research, which kudos to you, which is awesome. And I know people can be afraid of soy. So I'm curious where you stand on that side or that issue.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a question I get a lot. So there is a lot of contradicting research about soy. Like, there's a lot of really positive research about the benefits of soy, and then there's a lot of negative research saying that increases the risk of cancers and then, like, the estrogen effect. So it's one of those foods that I eat in moderation, and I think that's how it should be eaten. It does have a lot of health benefits, but of course when you go overboard with anything, it could potentially have negatives. So I've been kind of just trying to keep up and see, like, as new stuff comes out, where it stands. But it's still a lot of conflicting evidence. But for me, that means, like, you know, eat it here and there. I maybe have, like, soy products once a week or so, maybe a little more depending on the type of soy. Again, like, not all soy is equal. So if I'm eating, like, tofu, I'll get organic for sure. So it's not genetically modified and not processed. And I like to eat it in the wholest form. So, like, soybeans, like organic edamame, rather than, like, I'm not really one for, like, the fake meats that are made from soy that are super processed.
With, like, soy protein isolate.
Exactly. Like, that for me, I don't go down that road. I try to just keep it as whole as possible, because the studies that do say that there are positive benefits of soy, it's like the people who are eating, like, most pure soy, like in Japan. And
yeah, like edamame, tempeh.
Exactly.
Good quality tofu.
It's, like, fermented. So yeah, I mean, I don't cut it out. I eat it. I don't eat it, like, every day, but it's definitely can be part of a healthy diet, in my opinion, from the research that I've looked at.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't looked at all the same research as you, but I researched my own body, and I can tell you that, you know, real high quality tempeh is a hell of a lot different than these processed veggie burgers, you know, not to shit all over, excuse my language, everybody, but not to shit all over, what's it called? The burger that everyone's eating right now. Not the Impossible Burger, but it's similar to that, that you can get it at home. It's that big burger that everyone's.
I feel like there's so many.
What's the big burger everyone's freaking out about? I'm going to Google it. veggie burger. It's like tastes like meat.
I feel like I know what you're talking about, but I can't think of it.
Beyond Burger.
Oh, yes.
That is, and it's like, and that's similar to the Impossible Burger, but that stuff is just all processed crap. And that's a heck of a lot different than just eating, you know, organic tofu.
Yeah. Well, I think the Beyond Burger actually doesn't have soy in it.
Really?
Yes. I think
it's. What is it? Is it seitan?
No, it's, I think it's just like, I don't know. I have to look at the ingredients.
I'm having my internet's like not loading it right now.
Yeah, Beyond Burger ingredients. Yeah, but I agree with you.
Do your research. Figure it out.
The soy burgers are like that kind of stuff I don't eat, but I eat like the whole soy. Like I'll eat a soybeans for sure. But And that's why I think the disconnect is, and it goes back again to like clean eating. Just because you're eating plant-based food doesn't mean it's always clean.
Right. So when you say clean eating, what does clean mean to you?
So clean means like whole food ingredients. It means like, I like to say it's not like perfect eating because you're just trying to be as clean as possible, as pure as possible. But if you're making it yourself, that's already cleaner than eating like at a restaurant because you're in control of what goes into it. So if you're eating a cookie from like the supermarket, if you look at the ingredients, it's going to have like, you know, all sorts of sugars, not even just like cane sugar. And I'm sure it has all sorts of weird like corn syrups, and then you'll get all those like additives and stuff that you don't even know what it is. You're like, mm-hmm. This is a weird chemical name. So like a cleaner version of that would be to make your cookies at home, even if you are using sugar. But then like the clean, and even step above a cleaner version is, you know, like using mashed bananas instead of like cane sugar, or even like using a little bit of pure maple syrup, or like just cutting down on the amount of sugar. So it's really just trying to know your ingredients, to eat foods that are sustainably sourced, to eat foods that don't contain pesticides and preservatives and additives, and really just trying to keep it as pure as possible, within reason, obviously. But I like the term clean eating because it doesn't confine you to one type of eating. It doesn't
mean,
like, I think there's so many diets out there that have good messages, like vegan or even like some aspects of paleo. But when you say those, when you give those labels, it suddenly restricts you. And I think that it makes people do it for a second, and then they realize it's not going to be sustainable for the long term, and then they give up instead of kind of just like eating clean as much as they can, but not beating yourself up if you like break the rules. But there aren't really rules in cleaning. It's more just trying to like eat the best quality food possible.
Like real food. Just eat real freaking food. You're right. Sorry. I was Googling this while you were speaking. There is no soy and there is no gluten, but I had it and it made me feel like crap. It's all processed. Yeah. What the hell is in it?
I think it says here it's pea protein isolate. And then it's just a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah. Well, here we go. I finally found it. The second ingredients, canola oil, then there's coconut oil, then there's maltodextrin and all these crazy shits. Succinic acid, another acid. A color. I don't know.
Yeah. A lot of stuff in there.
I wouldn't call that clean.
Yeah. I haven't done my research on Beyond in terms of the ingredients and how like great it is, but I usually tend to stay away from stuff like that just because I like to eat my food whole. So like I would rather kind of create my own veggie burger using like mushrooms or lentils or whatever. I think that's like an okay alternative for some people when they like, if someone eats burgers every day, which people do, believe it or not, to like swap that out, I think is like a positive. It's a step in the right direction again. But the way I eat is kind of to steer away from like the packaged products and make my own. I think I feel better that way. I'm like you, I'm like sensitive to foods like that. It kind of gives me tummy aches.
Yeah.
Even some like vegan restaurants, when I'll go to them, like I'll be really excited by their menu and I'll like order something and then it gives me a stomach ache, but it's like, I don't really know what they put in there to make this like fake thing, you know?
Yeah. I avoid the fake things. Like eat the clean food, eat the real food, eat the plant food.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of fake things, anyone listening to this podcast actually knows I am a diehard Sun Warrior plant protein powder fanatic, but your book actually has recipes for making homemade plant protein powder.
Yes.
Talk me through this, por favor.
Yeah. So when I was writing the book, I was asked to include some recipes for protein powders, which I mean, I think is great because protein powders are a good way for those people who are looking to get that extra, extra boost. Like people who work out a lot and always love their protein smoothies and stuff like that. Like I think protein powders can be wonderful if you're trying to up your intake, or, you know, if you're like going to work in the morning and you're rushing and you want to just like make a quick smoothie, which some people love to do, like that's a good way to add in some extra nutrients. And then as I was doing it, I kind of had the thought, like, you know, what if you could just make your own protein powder out of things that you already had at home rather than having to buy like a special like vegan protein powder. So the way I did it in the book was I had three options. One of them is a protein powder that's like literally made from scratch from like nuts and seeds, like that you already have and just like blend them or like ground them in like a blender.
Wow, cool.
Which is cool. I think if, you know, you really want to eat like as pure as possible, or you want to just like add that even to like baked goods or to like oatmeal as less of like a smoothie supplement, although it can be used for that as well. I think that's like a good cheap way to do it. And then I also had one that was made with brown rice protein, another that was made with pea protein. And I like to include those recipes because it kind of ends up being cheaper when you make them your own at home. And it's not that hard to find those protein powders. You can get them on Amazon, you can get them on like health food stores, and it ends up saving you money. And you can, I added in a few other like protein sources to those protein powders to kind of like give it more variety of nutrients instead of just like having only like pea protein powder, which also like doesn't really taste that great on its own, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So I use those protein powders in some of the recipes in the book. I use them in some of the smoothies, and you can add them to things like soups.
Really? That's, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's another good way. You can make them like sweet or savory. So I think I made like a chocolate brown rice cinnamon one. But if you just take out the cocoa and take out the cinnamon, you can make it more of like a savory protein powder.
Wow, that's cool. I usually just do sweet things with protein powder.
Yeah, I think that's how most people do it too. But I have a few like baked recipes in there also that use the protein powder in replace of some flour.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, that's the way to go. Yeah. I do that with my pancakes and waffles every morning.
Yeah,
because it protein is what fills you up. And, you know, we were talking about anxiety, and when your blood sugar is balanced, with which protein helps you do, you're not going to have those blood sugar spikes, which can actually screw with your emotions and your anxiety.
Exactly.
Yeah. So,
yeah, it's really important, I think, for people to realize that, like, even just being hungry, like if you're not properly fed, if you didn't have a good balanced meal, like that can make you moody.
That's why they call it hangry.
Yeah. And it's no coincidence, which is why some of those like extreme diets end up messing with people in other ways. Like maybe they lose their weight or whatever, but like they have brain fog. Like I know personally, I have to eat breakfast before I start any work because I cannot focus if I'm hungry.
Mm.
And I feel like my energy drop, and I like always have breakfast, and I try to make it as balanced as possible with like, you know, not just like one egg or whatever. I'll like have some toast for fiber and that kind of stuff, because it really, really does affect how I feel.
Yeah.
And which, how I work.
Do you try to get protein? I mean, I try to get some source of plant protein in with every meal or snack that I have. Are you on that same team?
Yeah, definitely. And whether it's just like through the addition of seeds or nuts.
Yeah.
But like I said, chickpeas. I don't like load up every meal with like 50 grams of protein like some people do, which I just think is unnecessary. But yes, I always aim to have protein. I always aim to have a healthy fat. I always aim to have some sort of carb, obviously the healthier kinds, not just like a white one. But and like I said, every meal isn't perfect. So sometimes I'm in a rush and I'll just have like avocado toast, and that's not like loaded with protein, although there is some if I eat like an Ezekiel bread or whatever.
Yeah.
But then if that happens in my next meal, I'll make a big salad and really load it up. It's kind of more about like your comprehensive meal plan and your eating than just like in each individual meal has to be perfect. You just want to make sure you're like looking at your diet and you're like, I'm not just eating like pasta every day. And,
sure, like, most of the time that matters most.
Yeah, exactly.
What is your like go-to favorite plant protein source?
I think I have to say chickpeas.
I've been sensing that from you.
Yeah. I just love the way they taste. Like I like to mash them up with avocado, or I like to make them really crispy in the oven. That's kind of, I think, my favorite way. Mm-hmm. I mean, they make a hummus, so obviously like those are really good. Yeah, I would say like chickpeas, and then I think hemp seeds are another one of my favorite, just because they're so easy to throw into really anything.
Yeah. What do you do? Sprinkle on salads and on toast and stuff?
Salads, toast. I'll even put it in my pasta dishes sometimes. Mm. You can put them in smoothies. I've sprinkled them even over like strawberries before.
Ooh.
Yeah. I love the little crunch that they add. They're really healthy. And they're just, I just whip it out of my fridge, like
whip it out,
take out the bag, sprinkle it on, put it back in. It's just like such an easy addition.
Yeah.
Mindless to put them on there.
That's really good. They're kind of like an old hippie, you know, ingredient, but keeping them on trend.
I know what you mean though. Like my grandma and my mom were the ones who got me into health, and my grandma was like the one who, I don't know, in like the 70s was like reading all about nutrition. She gets like these Berkeley wellness letters that me a subscription to also. I've been like watching her eat all these like crazy weird hippie foods since I was young. And back then I didn't like them, but now we like bond over all the weird foods we
eat. That's so cool. She must be so proud.
Oh yeah, she is.
That's awesome. All right, a few final plant questions for you and then I'll let you go. What is your favorite planty restaurant?
I really love Cafe Gratitude.
Mm-hmm. So good.
It's really good. Their whole like menu of the I am blank makes me laugh every time I order from there, having to say like, I am happy.
I usually don't say it. I'll just be like, all of the French toast, please. And they're like, you mean the I am blissful? And I'm like, yes.
Exactly. That's what kept happening to me. So I was like, okay, it's time for me to follow the rules. They do exactly what I like, which is taking foods that you would eat regularly. So they have like lasagna and like pizza and nachos, but then they like make them plant-based, which makes it accessible for a lot of people. And they just have the best drinks that are like, I mean, they're really pricey, but they're like my guilty pleasures. It's like, you know, like adaptogenic latte.
Yes.
And I'm like, I'm treating myself right now to this, but it's tasty.
Wait, you're having it right now?
No.
When you're doing it. Oh, okay.
No, I wish.
Yeah. Totally. When I was in LA, I had this amazing at Cafe Gratitude. Well, we went twice. We were only there for like 3 days and we went to Cafe Gratitude twice because we wanted to experience the breakfast and the dinner. No, lunch. It was lunch and breakfast. Anyway, and I had this amazing cacao mushroom, like ashwagandha situation. And it was so good. And I've tried to recreate it at home and it just hasn't been the same.
I know. That's the thing. I don't know how they do it, but it tastes delicious.
They put the gratitude in it. They put the love.
Yeah, it's true. They are love.
Yes. So what is your favorite plant to eat?
This is such a cliche answer, but I do really love kale.
Kale. Shocker. Yeah. Good. That's good.
It's such a boring answer, but...
No, you got to stay on brand.
I still haven't gotten sick of kale salads, surprisingly.
What's your jam? Like what's your secret? What do you do for a kale salad?
Well, my secret that I tell everyone who doesn't like kale is that they have to massage it.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom always is like, I don't want to massage my kale. Like, that's so much work. I don't want to touch my vegetables. I'm like, no, but it just really makes a difference in terms of like the texture and even like the bitterness. Like, it makes it much less bitter. And I always, for people who don't like kale salads or like kale at all, I give them this like classic that I make, and I'll massage the kale and I'll finely chop up garlic till it's like almost like a paste. And then I toss the kale and the garlic with some lemon, olive oil, and a little bit of Parmesan cheese and like salt and pepper. And it's like very simple, and I'll just like toss it together. And usually people like it, even if they're not kale people.
That sounds amazing. Massaging really is the key. It makes it soft. Really. It makes it easier to digest, it's just good. It's a different animal than raw, just like unmassaged kale.
Totally. And people think it's a lot of work, but it takes me like 2 seconds. Like, I just drizzle the olive oil on, put some salt, like mush it between my hands for like, honestly, like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And then it's so much better.
Yeah.
And I think like if it encourages you to eat your greens, like just do it. It's kind of fun. Like often you just like use your hands like that.
Totally. Just make sure you wash them unless you don't like who you're serving it to.
Exactly. Keep your hands clean.
I love it. The only problem is I always have to take off my rings and then I get nervous if I'm going to lose them.
That is true.
It's very stressful.
You don't want it all oily.
What is your most used kitchen tool besides your hands?
Well, obviously like my pots and pans. But I use my blender a lot actually, because I make a lot of pestos. I use my blender to make my matcha tea in the morning. I'll use it to make like vegan sauces. I mean, you definitely don't have to have like an expensive blender to do any of these things. I was using a NutriBullet for the longest time and it was like doing a great job.
Yeah.
But it's good to have something to blend. Because that's how you get creative. You know, you make like these sauces and pestos, and like pesto is another way I love to add like protein to things. Like I'll make a pesto that's filled with like nuts and nutritional yeast.
Yes. Hemp seeds.
Hemp seeds. Like you can use seeds, nuts, all that stuff. And you just like add that to a dish that you already have. And it's like tasty and there's more protein in there.
I love it. And also nowadays with all the high protein pastas, you know, like the chickpea pastas, the black bean pastas, lentil pastas, you just throw a high protein pesto on a pasta and you got like a pretty proteiny powerhouse planty meal.
Yeah. Those high protein pastas are like the best thing to happen in recent times.
Especially the chickpea ones for you, Miss Chickpea over there.
Yes. I love that pasta. But I've actually turned a lot of my friends and like a lot of guys, I feel like that one because it's so high in protein and they like the easiness of it. Because people who I feel like are afraid to cook fancy things will turn to pasta, which I totally get because that was like the first food I was ever into and I still love it.
Yeah.
But like the chickpea pastas are great because you can just make that and throw a sauce over it, like you said, a pesto over it. And it's easy and high in protein and it's filling and it tastes delicious.
Yeah. So, and it looks huge great. Fan.
Yeah.
What's your go-to pesto combo?
I love to do like a kale walnut.
Do you toast the walnuts or raw?
I don't. Oh. I just stick them right in there. Yeah.
Right on it.
And I guess that one's like a little thicker than some pestos, which I like. I kind of like when my pestos are chunky. Mm-hmm. But I always do like garlic, lemon, olive oil, and then I'll do basil. And then either I do like a green like kale or arugula, and then I'll do something like nuts or seeds. And then sometimes I add nutritional yeast, which kind of gives it like that like Parmesan cheesiness, the honey cheese.
I love it. We're so similar in that we both sneak our, well, in a lot of ways, but we both sneak some kale or spinach or arugula into our pestos. That's not a common thing, I don't think.
It's not, but I'm trying to push it because it's
all
really
I do.
Like,
why not? You don't taste it.
Eat your greens.
Like literally, I think just it makes adds it bulk. Taste better.
And texture.
Yeah, man. All right, guys, if anyone takes anything away from this, add kale, spinach, or arugula to your pestos. There you go.
Yes. A great
your,
takeaway.
Yeah, over your chickpea pasta. Okay, what is a book that has really inspired you in some awesome way besides your own?
any book or a healthy
any
book?
Any book. It could be any book or a healthy book. I don't know, just a book that comes to mind that's like, bam, that made an impact on me.
Well, back to the food and mood thing, The Mood Cure.
Oh.
Was the book that first got me into reading about the connection between mood and food. So if people are interested in that, I would say they should check that book out. And then another book that also came to mind that has nothing to do with food or mood is The Alchemist.
Oh, yeah.
I read that book and I was so inspired. It's like, I don't know even how to explain what kind of book it is. It's like an allegory or something.
Yeah.
But it was just, I don't know, it made me feel motivated in a way that I cannot explain. I'm a huge reader, so I read all sorts of like, you know, I read fiction, historical fiction, philosophy, that kind of stuff, in addition to all the food research that I do.
Man.
But yeah, those keep me on my toes too.
That's great. I'm looking at my copy of it right here.
Oh,
staring
nice.
At me. Yeah. So we're same boat again. All right. Where can everyone go to maybe kale you? I worked on that for so long.
Well, obviously on Instagram, I'm Kale Me Maybe, and they can find me on my blog and website at kalememaybe.com. And Facebook also Kale Me Maybe, but I would say blog and Instagram are the best places to find out what I'm up to.
I bet a lot of people tried to make that their name.
Yeah. Like, I hope not.
No, I mean, you own it and that's great, but I kind of feel like that's a thing that people probably tried to do.
Yeah, the kale puns are good. They never get old.
I know. I had another woman on this podcast with a kale pun, run like kale.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see how many kale pun peeps I can get on the podcast.
There are some out there. And every time I hear a new one, I get really excited because when I was making my blog name too, I really wanted to do a kale pun, but I didn't want it to have to do with killing.
Oh.
So like, yeah, which were some of the puns were like, you know, like kale me now, like kill me now. And I'm like, that's funny, but I want something a little more upbeat and less dark.
Right.
which is how I landed on the Carly Rae Jepsen song.
Love it. Love it. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today. It's been so much fun.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was a great time.
Craving all the plants.
I know, and I'm ready for my kale lunch.
Perfect. Thank you so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. I hope you're feeling some ants in your pants to get your plants on today, tomorrow, this week. How sick to think that not only are they working wonders for your bod, but also for your mind, which, yes, is part of your bod, but you know what I mean. I wasn't just tooting Karina's horn, by the way. Her plant protein recipe book really rocks and is really linked in the show notes at partyinmyplants.com/67. Know what else would really rock? If you would take a few secs to share this podcast episode with someone who you think would really dig it, or someone who you really want to get kale me maybe stuck in their head.